Oh, hello.
Hello.
And welcome to the New York Mystery Machine.
Tamina Hall, but for ghosts.
Oh, gosh. New microphones.
New microphones.
Kids.
And so, me live in the studio with them. Okay. Oh, boy. I'm so sorry. Okay, I haven't even become the
we're
full
popping,
to me yet.
We're popping yellow.
Okay, well.
You guys know when I say we're popping yellow, that means the little color on our sound interface
has gone yellow.
It's, when the sound goes into it, that's a normal volume. It hits green. When it's too loud, it hits yellow. When it's critical, it hits red.
Guess what color I stay on?
It's yellow all the time, folks. Worry not.
Did you miss me?
It is always yellow. All right. We are back with an all episode. We got a lot of fun feedback for our best of 2023 episode last week, which is nice. And I mean, like, you know, lying about that. We actually got really good feedback.
Not that we would ever lie about that.
I've never lied ever, but we actually did get a lot. Well, sometimes what happens is we record things in a row and we assume we're going to get good feedback. So we say it,
right,
but we actually don't know if we got good feedback. And normally
this time there was a gap,
but this time there was a gap. And we actually know that we got good feedback. People seem to like it. You guys seem to listen to it.
And crazy.
I thought it was fun because it was just a lot of, fun things that we just I forgot about.
Oh yeah, I fully forgot whole episodes, whole forgot about the Jerry Seinfeld thing, and that was recent.
I didn't forget about the Jerry Seinfeld thing. In fact, I was looking for that Jerry Seinfeld. I like messaged Christina.
You did. That's when I remembered it.
I messaged Christina frantically about the Jerry Seinfeld thing. I couldn't remember what episode it was, and she was watching me, like, or watching my text messages process how
in real time, how I
figured out where episode it was on.
And totally forgot about our Buddy Cop show, which still here for.
Still here for.
Thank you for making the clip show happen, Adam.
Well, Christina, you had a couple of tough weeks.
It's been a few rough weeks.
It's been a few tough weeks. How are you doing?
That is a loaded question.
Oh, God.
I am alive and I am happy to be here. Let's just say that moving with a 3.5-month-old and returning to work and losing your beloved cat at the same time is not something I recommend to anyone.
That is fair. That is fair. Well, you know, we love our furry friends here on the Mystery Machine. Yeah. As we said last week, or as I said last week, where we send you all of our love and happy that you are back in studio. I do not like doing the Tamina Hall for Ghosts things by myself.
I think you did an excellent job.
I just don't like him.
I think you did an excellent job.
We do want to take a moment. We had a brand new review come in.
Oh.
And it's always nice when reviews come in. So it's nice to take a moment to do that. You guys can leave reviews anywhere you listen to the podcast for the most part, except for Spotify. Spotify, you can leave us a rating, but you can't review us. But on Apple Podcasts and on Audible, you can leave us a review. And we actually would implore you to. We know there's hundreds of you every week who listen to the show.
Yeah.
If you could just take a moment out of your day, 3 seconds, to give us a rating and give us a review, ideally 5 stars, it goes such a long way.
Yeah.
You guys don't even have an idea like how long it goes. So if you can do that, then we'll read it on air and we'll just be so appreciative. We'll send you some stickers and all that
and
jazz.
Then you can email Spotify and be like, Spotify, what gives?
What gives?
Add a little review section.
What gives? This week's review comes from Audible. And it comes to us from Penny, 1970. Penny has given us 5 stars for overall performance and story.
Hmm.
And Penny wrote, teaching me something every week. Adam and Christina are amazing, well-informed storytellers. I am a Scooby-Doo fan who came for the logo and stayed for the outstanding stories of New York and the surrounding areas.
I love that.
I love that.
I also love that we lured Penny in under false pretenses.
And it's not the first time.
It's not the first time. So thanks, Penny.
Yeah.
But
we have our friend at Daphne too, who
yes,
who followed us because of the logo. And
they have swiftly discovered.
You guys remember we posted that interview like back in season one. We were like, we like Scooby-Doo enough, but we really like the look.
And I thought it was about the political machine. So here we are.
Well, folks,
Well, Penny, thanks for that.
Yeah, thanks, Penny. Penny, reach out to us on our socials at NY Mystery Machine on either, ideally on Instagram, but you can also send us an email, nymysterymachine@gmail.com. At NY Mystery Machine on Facebook or TikTok or at NY Mysteries on X. And we would love to send you a couple of stickers as a thank you for your wonderful review. And I think that's all the...
All the announcements?
I think that's all the announcements.
We get your t-shirts in now before they leave below the collar.
Yeah, I am working on where the new home for t-shirts will be. I have two options. One option is a completely free thing for us, and one will leave us with fees. Mm. The one with fees, I've already gotten samples of, and they're quality AF. Mm. And the one that's completely free is not the quality I'd love them to be, but they're not bad quality. So I'm making some decisions on that in the next couple of weeks, because we'd like to have a smooth transition. But for now, you head on over to belowthecollar.com/NYMysteryMachine for you can, you know.
All your t-shirt needs. But you know what? Makes a great Hanukkah gift. Makes a great Christmas gift.
Is there another one?
Makes a great Kwanzaa gift.
Sure. So you know. I'm wearing the Veiled Murderess tee right now. I wore my Tedward tribute tee a few weeks ago. I wore my Pride tee a few weeks ago.
I wore my alien abduction tee.
So yeah, send us pictures of you and your shirts. We'd love to see them. Love to show them on the socials and all that jazz. All right, well, let's get into a story
what
today.
What are we doing today, Adam?
Today we are taking a trip all the way to the Rolling Hills Asylum out in East Bethany, New York.
Ooh.
Now, just the mere mention of the word asylum.
I was going to say asylum.
Asylum. Just the mere mention of the word asylum brings chills up our spines, because we kind of know what that means, because we know what asylums did to poor people.
It's a no good.
To many people who actually had medical issues that were kind of undiagnosable at the time. So many neurodivergent people who were just thought as slow or crazy were thrown in these asylums as well. Yeah. We know now that just the mere mention of the word slow is terribly offensive.
Yep.
But that's of the day. If you look at a lot of these medical journals, that is what they were calling these human beings. And so
the other term you'll see sometimes is simple.
Simple.
I remember even my family, my great great grandfather had a brother that everyone talked about as being simple.
There it is. I'm gonna fix your volume. I'm working on these volumes, you guys. I think I'm getting it. If Christina speaks into the mic.
I have been speaking into the mic. I have been speaking into this mic. My face has been right here.
I don't know why you're yelling at me.
I'm not even. This is not yell. Oh, Adam, I have not yet begun to yell into this new microphone.
Oh, God.
Protect thine ears.
Christina has been in the studio in a couple of weeks, you guys.
I haven't.
She's in rare form.
And
now she lives in a different borough that's not as good as the one she came from.
You know what? It's not that it's not as good. Perhaps. I disagree with that fully.
We should get back to this.
It is just as good. No, this is important. Let's disagree. It is just as good.
I will say it is, of all the boroughs, it is the second least of our listenership.
Well, that's because we had no base there.
And now you're going to pull it up.
I'm going to pull it up single-handedly.
That was a long tangent that felt very abrupt. Maybe that won't make the show. In any case, we know asylums, and we know that their history is very, very sordid here in the U.S., especially in New York. We know this from our episode 28, if you recall, Horrors at Roosevelt Island. That episode provided a firsthand look at folks living in the asylum.
Nellie Bly,
and her remarkable tale of survival in the Roosevelt Island Asylum. So Rolling Hills Asylum was originally known as the Genesee County Poor Farm, and was established in the winter of 1826. Now, a poor farm.
I was going to say anything that's called a poor farm. Go on.
What's poor farm? A poor farm or a poor house was an institution built by the government or a charitable organization to provide housing to orphans, widowed women and their children, the disabled, the mentally ill, and minor criminals.
So it's like the baby farm we mentioned a few weeks ago.
Very much. The residents were all called inmates, regardless of the reasons that they were there. So that should give you all a sense of how folks are treated there. You know, if you are a sick person, being called an inmate is not the best.
Or an orphan being called an inmate.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. It wasn't until later on that these poor houses were later named asylums. Hmm. The Genesee County Poor Farm was actually a working farm.
So it's a workhouse.
It's also a workhouse. Mm-hmm. We'll get to that in a bit. The farm itself was self-sufficient with residents tending the land and animals as part of their chores. The grounds resembled a reformatory. These types of structures were common in the U.S. during the 19th and 20th centuries, prior to the adoption of the Social Security program in the 1930s. One really uncomfortable fact is that there seems to be a record of a cemetery located on the grounds of the farm, but has yet to this day been discovered.
Oh, well, that's upsetting.
Yeah. So, like, there is, you know, the county would bury those who had no family, much like those in Potter Fields,
right.
You know. And they would bury them on the land. And
we don't know where?
The cemetery itself has faded away. The stones are crumbling and they're wearing through the winds. So now all the bodies kind of just lay under the ground someplace. But it hasn't been, like, actually excavated or, like, given proper burial or reburied or tried
marked
to.
Marked in some way. Hate
or
that.
Marked in any way. Which is a little frustrating, mostly because we will learn later on that the asylum is currently open as a museum.
Mm.
And I don't know if I'm rocking a museum of any type and there are dead bodies anywhere near my museum, mm-hmm. I think we should spend some of that money to actually excavate stuff to give people proper burials. Mm-hmm. That's just my little
cheers
here.
I wouldn't disagree.
I didn't like, I as I was making the story, like, I didn't even connect that until, like, I got to the end and started typing, writing about what the uses of it are now. And I'm like, wait a minute. You're making money. Why are you not, like, actually doing the work? Anywho, jump off that.
What you could not say was Adam stepped off their soapbox.
Once again, sometimes you have to. When the Genesee County Poor Farm opened its doors in 1827, this was written in the Batavia Times newspaper. Do you want to read this?
Oh, sure.
You never read anything.
I'll read.
That'd be nice.
What do we feel is appropriate? Because I'm just going to default to randomly sort of not British if we don't have something specific in mind.
I got nothing in mind. Okay. It's a newspaper article, but it feels like it's looking down on the poor. So,
Notice is hereby given that the Genesee County Poorhouse will be ready for the reception of paupers on the first day of January 1827. The overseers of the poor of the several towns of the county of Genesee are requested, in all cases of removal of paupers to the county poorhouse, to send them with their clothing, beds, bedding, and such other articles belonging to the paupers as may be necessary and useful to them. The following are eligible for assistance: habitual drunkards, lunatics, one who by disease, grief, or accident lost the use of reason, or from old age, sickness, or weakness, was so weak of mind as to be incapable of governing or managing their affairs, paupers, a person with no means of income, state paupers, one who is blind, lame, old, or disabled with no income source, or a vagrant.
Thank you, Christine.
I hope I communicated absolute
every
disdain.
Every time you mentioned pauper or poor, I felt the disdain
great.
Fly off of you. Like, how dare they be poor?
A poor.
Get over here, paws. How dare you? In 1828, Genesee County constructed a stone building attached to the poorhouse for the confinement of quote-unquote lunatics and a repository for paupers committed for misconduct. The insane were also housed in the county home until 1887, when the Board of Supervisors agreed to send, quote, persons suffering with acute insanity elsewhere in the state. Just like all the verbiage.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, we're just throwing away insane and lunatic. Oof, lunatic.
Lunatic hurts.
That's a, my word.
Rough.
We're just throwing these terms around like we don't care. The Genesee County Poor Farm, a.k.a. the county home, was a self-sufficient working farm, as I said, and woods. It spanned over 200 acres, provided food and fuel. Thus, the cost to care for each person was actually low, about $1.08 per week per resident back in 1871. So they would use the farm.
Uh-huh.
And later we find out inmates were also working.
I was going to say, making the
farm. The
inmates
not
work.
All
okay.
Not all, but it's led, we later find out that there were inmates being forced labor on these farms. We use the farm to make resources, we sell the resources so that the operating costs of the farm, of the actual insane asylum, can be kept low.
I have so many feelings.
It's literally the quote-unquote sick literally taking care of themselves somehow.
Yeah.
And still being abused because we know the tragic history of
and
these
being
asylums.
Treated as a drain on society.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, right? We're looking at these things and we're saying, oh, we're spending our government money on on these vagrants and these paupers and these psychopaths. And it's like, well, actually, no, the farmers are actually sustaining it. You paid for the building probably out of your taxpayer money, but then that went away and then became a self-sufficient.
Not to go too far left here, but if you actually spent that government money on some of these poor people, then maybe we wouldn't have the problem to begin with. I'm just putting it out there.
Yeah. And it's so funny because it's a problem that we're even seeing
right now
till today, right? You know, we've seen this, especially here in New York City, so many people who need mental help are being instead arrested by police and thrown in jail, not given the proper treatment that they need. Money in social services is down. Police income is up, right?
Criminalization of the poorer classes and the ill.
Yeah. And so this isn't, you know, when we think about this in our current situation, this isn't new. This is something that's been happening over and over again. We're just gaining more money for criminalization instead because it's A, easier and A, cheaper. Criminalization is you just hire the police force as opposed to hiring the proper medical physicians to take care of the people who need that. And that's what we don't see here in these asylums. We didn't see it in Roosevelt Island, and we certainly don't see it here in Rolling Hills. Again, residents were referred to as inmates no matter why they were housed there, and those who were physically able-bodied would work the farm, and many actually built and made wares to sell to help offset some of the living expenses. The raising of Holsteins, pigs, draft horses, chickens, and ducks, raising vegetables and fruit crops, canning jams, jellies, meats were all part of the chores.
I mean, it sounds delicious.
But, you know, poor people were doing it.
At what cost?
They weren't getting paid for it, that's for sure. There was also a bakery and even a wood shop where coffins were made.
Oh.
The coffins were used and needed mostly for sale to local morticians, but also used for their own dead.
Which they then lost on their property.
Here we are. It's insane. Like, you literally built your own coffin. It's insane.
I've got feelings.
Yeah. Yeah, you were building your own coffin. The county would bury those who had no family, and records indicate there was once a cemetery located on the property, as I said earlier. But again, the particulars are almost non-existent. An 1886 proceeding states, quote, "The burying ground we have improved by building a fence in front and grading and leveling the ground as much as could be done without injury to the graves." And then years later, we just forgot about them.
Gosh. Like you do.
Like one does. In 1964, Rolling Hills became the Genesee County Nursing Home. Yikes.
Oh, God.
It's not where I would send my Grammy.
No, it feels like it's just getting worse and worse.
So in 1964, I'm not sure when it stopped operating as an asylum. That there's actually no clear date as to when it actually stopped.
It's a little bit of a gray area. They just, you know, one sort of bled into the other.
Yeah. It stood as that for about a decade, so roughly 1974. And it was finally closed in 1974 due to code issues.
Okay.
What? This building was not up to code?
What? You're kidding me!
You're telling me this building was not up to code? How dare they?
Shocking.
At the time, due to fear of quote-unquote vagrants moving in and vandalism, most of the old dorms were torn down, as well as many parts of the outbuildings. And of course, the cemetery was long forgotten.
Truly wild.
A memorial site was created in the Genesee County Park, and on June 6, 2004, five headstones dated from 1887 to 1888 were returned to the county. Hmm. The Genesee County historians dedicated a historical marker honoring those who died while living in the county home from 1827 until the facility was closed in 1974.
Okay, so there is some kind of recognition.
Yes, there is a marker. Residents were relocated to new facilities in Batavia. Now, Rolling Hills Asylum witnessed roughly 1,700 documented deaths on the property, with hundreds more that were unrecorded.
Oh, wow.
Which, again, these numbers are not crazy startling. If you go back down to the Roosevelt Island episode, we're looking at very similar numbers. Mm. People, these asylums didn't have the proper medical training for mm-hmm. those who actually needed it. And most of those who were there for the reasons that they did not need to be there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So you were a poor person who had nothing really wrong with them at all, but now you're being malnourished
right.
because you're here. Or you're someone who has what we now know is called autism.
Mm, mm-hmm.
And the people just think you're weird or disconnected mm-hmm. or crazy or insane or slow.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're treating these people like there's actual like crazy things wrong with them, and they're giving them lobotomies.
God.
As opposed to, we now know autism and the spectrum of autism is to be treated very differently
mm-hmm.
Without syringes in your back of your skull
right.
or spikes in the back of your skull.
Ooh.
So yeah, of the time, things were kind of insane, these asylums. And again, not to say they're all the same, but they all are very similar.
Yeah.
It is known now as the second most haunted site in the United States.
I mean, I believe that.
Now, we know these places did their very best to keep the horrors happening unknown to the general public.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it wasn't until Nellie Bly that we really got a sense of what was happening at right. the Roosevelt Island Asylum. But over the course of the years, tragic stories did find their way outside of the walls of the asylum. A few tragic stories that rolled out became heartbreaking more and more one after the other. One story involved a resident named Roy. Now, Roy suffered from extreme gigantism, a physical deformity that left his face deformed, his hands and feet oversized, and his height was well over 7 feet.
Mm-hmm.
Roy was a son of a prominent banker in New York, and that banker sent him to live at the asylum because the family considered him an embarrassment. He was brought to the asylum when he was around 12 years old and died there at the age of 62.
Oh, poor guy.
I mean, 12 to 62.
That's
his entire life. He loved opera and music. He was known in the asylum as a kind, gentle-hearted man. Throughout his years there, however, he was abused, forced into labor, and much of that labor quite grueling due to his size. They saw him as a strong giant
mm-hmm.
and not someone who's actually suffering and his bones are deteriorating.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people with giganticism, their bones physically can't handle
the
size and the growth.
Wow.
A famous case of that is if you're either honestly a wrestling fan or a pop culture fan, Andre the Giant was someone who suffered from that.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, Andre was huge, and his actual bones couldn't exist for that. He was in pain while he was filming much of A Princess Bride.
Wow. I had no idea.
Yeah. There are still stories of Roy walking through the halls, seeing large shadows being casted by someone who is well over 7 feet tall. And we're going to cover a few more stories of Roy as we go on. Now, one of the nurses in the infirmary, Nurse Emmy, she was known for her absolute cruelty. She was feared by the inmates and the staff and was even rumored to have performed satanic rituals and black magic on the residents themselves.
Do we have a year for this story? Or an era, I should say, for the story?
This is in the 1800s,
okay.
Late 1800s. Reports have circulated that Nurse Emmy still walks the halls of Rolling Hills as visitors hear a cackle-like sound laugh coming from the infirmary today.
No, thank you.
There have been other reports of cruelty from staff members, but the residents of the asylum did their best in sticking together and protecting each other. Now, another paranormal hotspot in the asylum is known as Hattie's Room.
Mm-mm.
It's located on the first floor of the East Wing. The room has captured voice recordings of an elderly woman yelling hello. It is believed that this voice is the voice of a former patient named Hattie who was blind and used to yell hello all day and night to get the attention of staff and nurses. Moving up the building, the second floor men's dormitory is referred to as Shadow Hallway.
Oh.
It's a fitting name because that is a place where visitors always see shadows. They walk out of the doorways, across the halls, they peek behind doors, and they're seen usually crawling across the floor as well.
Oh, no, thank you. No, thank you. No, no, no.
The psych ward is and solitary confinement locations are some of the most haunted and paranormal.
Solitary confinement.
Iron brackets protrude out of the cement walls of a small room in the basement, which is believed to have shackled unruly inmates. So when you were said to be unruly, they would pack you in a small room that was completely pitch black and basically latch your hands to the wall in that darkness. And most inmates passed away in that as well because they weren't being given any resources.
Poor people.
The morgue is a hotbed for activity as well. There's a large embalming table still there, two refrigerators, and a huge steel sink. It's full of disembodied voices, and people have reported being even shoved down onto the cold tile when they were
there.
Oh,
no.
Now, there are many theories as to why the asylum is so haunted. One of them is that the asylum was actually the home to most of these residents. It's the only home they ever really knew. Mm-hmm. You look at someone like Roy, who moved there when he was 12 years old. It was their only home. So some of them who lost their first home, who lost their parents, their spouses, they're just there hanging out as mm-hmm. that's the place that they remember the most. And so for them, it's probably still a very safe place, even though for us, so mm-hmm. often we confuse ghosts for the more sinister. Mm-hmm. We know that sometimes ghosts are just caught in between worlds. Either they don't know that they need to move on, that are trying to complete other work they haven't finished in their life. So let us take a break. And when we get back, we're going to get into some real paranormal experiences as Rolling Hills. There's a lot of resources I was able to find and a lot of firsthand testimony. So when we get back from our break, we're going to cover all of that. We'll be right back. The New York Mystery Machine is brought to you in part by listeners like you.
That's right. Head on over to our Patreon, and for as little as $3 a month, you can help keep the pod growing.
By joining, you can access a whole bunch of cool stuff, such as mini episodes, swag, exclusive playlists, and more.
Head to www.patreon.com/NYMysteryMachine to find out more and become a patron.
That's www.patreon.com/NYMysteryMachine and join our ever-growing community today. Okay, we are back.
Whew.
And we are chatting all about Rolling Hills Asylum.
And it is a rough going.
Yeah, it is rough going. It is not great. Now, Weird New Jersey was invited to tour Rolling Hills back in 2013 by the current owner, Sharon Coyle. The following is from their account of their visit. Quote, "We met Sharon outside her house, which is on the asylum's property, and once served as a woodshop where inmates crafted coffins." Pause.
Yes, thank you. I have questions. What are you doing, Sharon?
What are you doing, girl?
You don't have to live
girl,
there.
What are you doing? What are
I
you
imagine
doing?
Anyway.
What are you doing?
And if you do,
why?
Like, let's talk.
What is that choice you're making? I don't understand the choice that you made.
In the shack where they made coffins, you choose to live?
Yes, I'll live there. What other place is there to live?
How
but
cozy.
The coffin shack. Coffin shack, baby, coffin shack. The coffin shack is a little place where we build coffins. Man. Yeah. Insane.
My brain's going to be stuck here for a while. I'm sorry.
There's so many places you can live.
Like not in the coffin shack.
Like not in the coffin shack. No one's to live in the coffin shack. Why?
I've got no words.
That's fair. Now, if there is any place that can be said to look quote-unquote haunted, Rolling Hills certainly fits the bill. The older four-story brick structure with its broken windows and pockmarked slate roof has the appearance of a classic institution of the bygone era. The adjoining newer facility behind it is a stark, unwelcoming look to an abandoned hospital. Mm. New Jersey continues. Sharon took us inside where the air was just as frigid as it was outside the building. We could hear the wind moaning through the broken window panes as she escorted us down the long, dim corridors of vacant rooms, which had housed thousands of inmates over the years. As we walked the echoing hallways, she offered us a bit of history of the place. We asked Sharon to describe some of the paranormal hotspots that Rolling Hills is known for and to share some of our own experiences with her. Here are a few. Hattie's Room. We mentioned this before the break. according to Sharon. The first floor of the East Wing, she says she left a tape recorder running in the room and caught a distinct voice of an elderly woman calling out hello. She believes it is the voice of a former patient of the nursing home who was blind and used to call for attention of the nurses. Sharon played the EVP for former employees who were shocked to hear Hattie's voice. It is also said that Hattie was probably of the era when it was a nursing home and okay. not when it was an insane asylum.
Okay.
Because Sharon played the EVP for former workers of the place and they recognized the voice.
Oh, wow. Okay. I see. Wow.
Then there's Roy's room. Mm-hmm. We spoke about Roy. Sharon told them that it would have been Roy's 123rd birthday that year and that all of the volunteers were going to be gathering later that night in his room for a celebration. Mm-hmm. Roy Krause was the 7-foot shadow man, and it was everyone's favorite apparition at Rolling Hills.
Favorite apparition. I love the idea of having a favorite apparition. Go on.
Sharon told them, Roy probably had gigantism caused by a tumor in the pituitary glands, which messes with the growth hormones. He lived out his life and died there in 1942. Sharon also told the story of running into a rat in the infirmary about 2 months after moving into Rolling Hills. Terrified by it, she screamed and ran away. The very next day, she found the rat dead on the stairs, blood oozing from its mouth as if its neck had been broken. On the wall above the rat was a giant bloody handprint.
Oh!
Sharon believes that the ghost of Roy witnessed her distress and killed the rat for her.
Also, phobias are phobias, and I am not one to talk about crazy phobias, but she does live in a coffin shack. I'm just shocked by the degree to which she was upset by this rat.
Oh yeah,
and she lives in a coffin shack.
Hun, you live in a coffin shack. What are you doing? What are you doing? But why? Porque why you do you do? On the second floor, East Wing, in the old men's dormitory, is a corridor referred to as shadow hallway. Mm-hmm. Sharon told them, "Quote: This is where we see a lot of shadow people." When you look down to the infirmary section, you start to see shadow people, and they could look like you and I, solid. They can be like gray, medium gray, dark gray, or pitch black. They could be normal human-shaped or amorphous shapes. They come in and out of the doorways, walk across the hall. Sometimes they poke out an arm or a leg. Sometimes they crawl on the floor.
Oh, I hate that so much.
And they can be creepy, especially if you're sitting on the floor during an investigation and one is coming at you because you can actually see the shadow moving towards you.
I hate that. I hate that.
I knew you would.
The crawling on the floor is some of the worst imagery I've ever heard in my life.
Many a strange and inexplicable shadow was captured by the Weird New Jersey video team while filming in the shadow hallway. On the day of their visit to Rolling Hills, I'll share that on the socials this week. Now, the psych ward in solitary confinement, Sharon showed them the iron brackets protruding from the cement walls. She said, back in the day, they didn't understand that you probably had a medical issue like Alzheimer's, epilepsy, Tourette's, Asperger syndrome, or you were just an unruly wife. Back then, if a man couldn't control his wife, he'd say, I'm going to lock you up. There are many reasons why they lock you up, so this area was not good.
Wow. Wow.
Then there's the morgue. Next to the embalming table, there are two large walk-in refrigerators with heavy latching doors. Their original purpose was for cold storage of human corpses. Sharon says a morgue is still rife with supernatural activity, such as ghostly voices and things being moved by unseen forces. Once again, people have been shoved and knocked off their feet here.
No, thank you.
And finally, the graveyard. Even the very land around Rolling Hills is said to be haunted because it is, in fact, hallowed ground. The county would bury those who had no family records in the cemetery, but again, it's no longer known. Stories like the experience of the Weird New Jersey team are pretty common, but if you are in need of more stories, don't worry. Rolling Hills' website has you covered. The asylum is still open as a historical site to tour, and this includes both history and paranormal tours. And the site has become a resource of folks' experiences as well. So here is a bunch of firsthand experiences.
Oh, man.
These are some testimony, and then we will go into some audio. And I'll have plenty of photos to show on the socials this week. Do you want to read some of these?
Sure.
So this first account is from Mary Fleming Dutton.
Dutton?
I feel like I always eat on your episodes, but you never eat on my episodes. So I'm trying to implement that more. And why I realized that is when putting together the best of 2023, I was like, oh, all the funny voices are on each other's episodes. Yes. And by most of them, I mean just on Christina's episodes. Because I never let Christina read.
That's because I keep defaulting to like the same vaguely British or mid-Atlantic.
Yeah, well, this girl's from like New York in 1998.
Okay, let's see if I can. In 1998, my fiancé, now husband, had an herb shop called The Raven's Nest in the room across from what was a little restaurant. A grandson of someone offered to take us upstairs when I told him about noises I was hearing, and I kept seeing a woman in an old-fashioned nurse's uniform walk past our shop door. When I would look down the hall, she would be gone, and you could hear her shoes squeaking. We went upstairs, and the owners had taken all the doors off and laid them inside the rooms. My husband and the boy, I cannot remember his name, were walking beside me. I have been psychic since I fell 6 feet onto concrete, splitting my head open. I was hearing low murmuring. As we walked past the rooms, one at a time, you could hear the doors slam shut. The boys were walking very fast at this point, but I saw movement from the corner of my eye. I stopped in front of one room and saw an old metal tub with a high back, an elderly man sitting there in steaming hot water, eyes closed and skin bright red. The woman in white that I had been seeing was leaning over him with a strange smile on her face. Everything happened very fast. The vision was gone, replaced by a room with rubble about the floor. I never saw the woman in front of our shop again. I did always hear murmuring, squeaking of wheelchairs and children laughing. I seem to draw spirits to me if they are around, maybe because they know I can hear them. It is good to know that this building and its history will be taken care of. I am sure the spirits will be a bit happier. Well, some of them. I have more things to tell about experiences there, but that's for next time.
Oh, man. It's my new favorite character.
Queen's Court.
Queen's Court. Mary Fleming Dutton's my new favorite Christina character. Queen's Court. This next one's from Mike from New Jersey Paranormal Research. He writes, we were just up when...
Larry?
Oh, Larry. We went up the stairs by the office area and started looking in rooms for a digital recorder we had left when we caught this loud, please stay in your room, and then it's nothing. We didn't hear these things when we recorded them, only on the playback. Classic Larry.
Classic EVP and classic Larry.
This is Carrie Kearns, co-founder, lead investigator of CPIR. On April 26, 2008, CPIR did an overnight public ghost hunt at Rolling Hills. It was not the first time at Rolling Hills for Mike or Ray, but it was for myself. Arriving at 4 p.m., we went to the area. We went to Rolling Hills to get some pictures during the daylight hours to see if we could talk with Lori, the previous owner. Although there were some cars outside the entrance, doors were locked. The doors opened for the public ghost hunt around 9:30 p.m. and we arrived around 9:10, and there are other few people already present and waiting. Once you get inside, you have to sign in and go through some short tour of the building with staff members who tells you of some of the experiences that occurred in specific locations. And following the ghost tour, there was a short informational video shown about Rolling Hill. There were said to be 50 people present during this ghost hunt, and there were two tour groups. We were part of the first tour group, and when we were done watching the video, we were allowed to go to the basement area to begin investigations. So that we did not disturb the other tour group on the upper level. With that, our investigation began. We used devices such as digital audio recorders, video recorders, and night vision, thermometer gauge, EMF readers, flash cameras. We also had a ghost box and sound amplifier present with us, but we did not get to use. Lastly, we had our own senses to experience all that Rolling Hill has to offer. As far as apparitions, the shadow people, none made themselves known that night. Sad face. We also did not get any hits off the EMF reader or drastic changes in temperature with a thermometer gauge. When it comes to evidence caught on camera, we did catch some orbs in many pictures, with some being more impressive than others. What appears to be some mist formation coming out from behind the nurse's station. In regards to the orbs, the facility is very old, and there is a lot of dust within the building. In regards to the mist, however, The facility is strictly non-smoking indoors, and there was no source of smoke or mist in the environment. On film, we did catch a rather interesting find using a flashlight for a flashlight experiment on the second floor hallway.
A flashlight experiment.
Where the doors to the solarium had been known to move on their own, and shadows of people standing and walking behind the doors in the solarium appear to occur when nobody is in the solarium. Since it was dark and catching the shadows of something walking on the other side of the doors was impossible to catch using video camera even with night vision, Mike came up with an idea of placing a flashlight on the other side of the doors in the solarium while we sat in the hallway to see if we can catch sight of any of these shadows walking about and catch them on film. There is no other way in or out of the solarium, and there was no one in the solarium. A short while after placing the flashlight within the room, the light had begun dimming as if something was walking up to it, and was even completely blocked as if something walked by it. There was an attempt to communicate with any spirits within the area when it appeared as if something walked quickly back across the light, and there was no further movement or flickering of the light that following that occurrence. And we sat there for a while afterwards. To note,
the
flashlight had not any problems with flickering previously, with all the batteries of the flashlight were carried were new. Was this a paranormal event or just a flashlight problem? T-shirt. Is it a paranormal event or a flashlight problem? Oh, God, there's more.
Oh, wow.
There's so much more. I'm so sorry, you guys. This is the longest account I've ever read, but I had to read.
Mm-hmm. I also just want to point out that everyone's missing your hand gestures throughout this. Adam has fully inhabited the character that they're
creating. In the new year,
creating.
We need to do some film work.
Yes.
This we can say, but there has not been any other problems with flashlight flickering or turning on and off. If you watch the movement of the shadow across the floor, it definitely appears as if the movement in front of the flashlight as opposed to the flashlight problem to our team. We had also caught some EVPs with our digital audio recorders. During the public ghost hunt, it was difficult to find a quiet location without someone walking and talking close by, and we had to wait until early morning hours when most people had left to do our EVP sessions to prevent contamination. One was when Mike was trying to provoke the shadow people into coming into the hallway on the second floor. And following a request of telling the residents to come out into the hallway, there was a Class A EVP with a voice that sounded like an old elderly lady yelling back, "You go away!" which we did not hear when recording. As far as our experiences, I was the only one that had experienced anything personally. Upon our arrival this afternoon, the facility, I had felt dizziness that stayed with me while we were there in the afternoon and went away after we were in the car and left the area. When sitting up in the electrotherapy room, I had experienced two episodes of a sharp pain that lasted approximately 1 minute to my left side of my head. Mm-hmm. Especially right above my left eye.
Oh, no, thank you.
We would love to share any and all evidence we have captured while we had investigated Rolling Hills. We only ask that we are credited for our evidence, caught, and submitted that there are no alterations to be performed. And that is, there's more of that.
Who is this so that we can properly give them credit?
Oh, gee, determined. Carrie Kearns, a co-founder and lead investigator of CPR.
Thank you.
CPR. C-P-E-A-R, Sapir.
Oh, Sapir.
There was more of that. It was just,
wow.
It's like a 3-page thing. So if you want to read more, you can head on over to the Rolling Hills. But there's a few more who aren't Carrie. So let's get through them quick. This is from Kurt Filipiak. He says, 3 years ago, myself and my two friends, Bobby and Tommy, were in the Christmas room doing EVPs. And we, upon review, came across this EVP, which I believe says, kill them.
Oh, no. Thank you.
On May 22nd, 2010, I was in the Christmas room again in the basement where I was using my K2
meter.
What is the
Christmas room?
I don't know, but I love it.
I don't know if I love it if they're telling people to kill them.
K2 meter and digital recorder were just asking random questions. I was getting some answers such as little bangs and noises here and there, but what I caught on my digital recorder is unexplainable. This really sounds like a small male child repeating what I had just said, and I was the only male in the room, let alone in the whole basement area. You'll hear me say, "Oh, thank you," because after asking for a noise, we got a response with a noise. Then you'll hear a small child. This is extremely clear, but headphones always help.
Okay, I'm ready.
I don't have it.
Oh, damn.
Frankly, Porcaro of the Adirondack Ghost Hunter Society says, "My team members and I were in the shock therapy room and we caught the organ in the upstairs playing two notes on our EVP recorder. It is one of the best EVPs I've ever caught." Joyce Selipak says, "I just wanted to say that yesterday, 8:30, we had stopped by Rolling Hills to inquire about a tour. We drove around the building and we were greeted by a new owner in the back of the building. And I was talking to her and I heard from my car yet what sounded like grunting noises. My friend just prior to it heard a woman scream. I didn't hear it as I was talking to the new owner. It was approximately 8 to 8:30 p.m. It was a little overcast as rain was expected south and east of Buffalo. We had since decided to take the tour. Hopefully this weekend is possible. I can't wait."
It was a little overcast.
It's a little overcast.
It's a little overcast, but you know.
Christopher Fleming, a psychic medium, took a drawing of what he saw when he was there. He drew one of the shadow people.
Oh, no.
He said that it took place around 2:30, 3 a.m. to the left of one of the rooms in the hallway in the basement corridor. With him was Patrick Burns and four late-night auction-winning fans. He says he'll never forget, as they were staring down the hall watching the shadow people, I suddenly turned to the left and my gaze was drawn away from the darkness and into the room alongside me. The moonlight was shining through the large window and there was a solid male figure standing in front of the illuminated, still staring at us. For what seemed like 3 seconds, I stared at this dark, foreboding person, and before I could yell for the others beside me to turn, what seemed like he imploded into a small mist of a shadow, 1/8 the size of the previous manifestation, and took off leftwards towards the room and out the door. In all my years, I had never seen a shadow person dematerialize so quickly, yet take form like that in less than 2 seconds. I felt like he was saying in an intimidating way, "Now you see me, now you don't." I don't believe in vampires, but the way it stood, the overcoat was wearing, the pose, as well as the form it quickly shifted to, proved to me that ghosts or spirits with conscious minds can change their appearance as quickly and as thought or action that we make our own physical realm. I have realized that they are capable of outsmarting us and moving about so quickly, with such ease and control. It is extremely rare to even get a glimpse of them. The fact that it blocked out the window completely and had gone from solid to shadowy mist in seconds left me staring at the empty window wondering, did I catch him before it left, or did it want me to see its sense of control that it has in our realm? I may never know. And this is the picture he drew of what he saw that
Ooh.
Day. And I'll share that on social media.
Absolutely a vampire.
And like I said, if you head to their website, there is so many photos.
Oh, wow.
Some of them. Of the shadow people. Sharon wrote a lot of stuff about them. Orbs and all sorts of things. I'll show a bunch of these on social media this week, but feel free to head over to rollinghillsasylum.com. They have an evidence section. They have a story section. They have plenty of stuff. There's also a bunch of YVPs.
Or EVPs.
Like this is one. This is the one I like.
I couldn't quite make out what the words were, but it's definitely a voice.
Yeah. There are so many people.
Wow. I love that they just have like this section for like uploading your experience.
Yeah, I literally can't even get through half of it. Like this, I gave you this like a little saison, if you will, because there's so much.
Wow. Definitely check it out, guys.
Yeah. It's another.
I and we can bring some and we can play it for you if you'd like that.
Did you hear?
There was a little, there was something. I don't know what it was.
Try it one more time and I'll tell you what they
need
to be.
And we can bring some and we can play it for you if you'd like that.
That's all. It's like I can hear the intonation. I can't.
They believe it's that would be fine.
That would be fine.
Listen to the guy. Oh.
And we can bring some and we can play it for you if you'd like that.
Oh, yeah, I can hear that. Yeah.
So there's so many. There's a bunch, you guys. Again, it would take me, this is one of our longer episodes that we've had in a while because there's just so much evidence to go through. So be sure to head over if you're really interested to Rolling Hills Asylum. There's more stories. There's more EVPs. There's so much photos and videos. I'll try to share as much as I can on the socials this week. But that is Rolling Hills Asylum.
Thank you for that, Adam.
Oh, you're so welcome.
What a horrifying place.
It's not great.
On many levels.
It's not great. But it is what it is.
It is what it is.
We're back all new next week with a brand new episode, our final episode of 2023.
Man.
It is it's so weird, you guys. It's crazy, but
we love it.
I stand by it. If you are interested in supporting the pod in a deep way, you head on over to patreon.com/NYMysteryMachine for as little as $3. You can join the community for as little as $5. You get some bonus Patreon exclusives that you can listen to on the Patreon app or Spotify app. Be sure to do that. We're thankful for all of our patrons. We have these amazing microphones. Thanks to you. We're so grateful for you. That's about it. We said t-shirts. We talked about social media. We did all those things.
Told them they're great.
We told them they're great.
Yeah.
All right. We're back next week. I've been Adam Ace.
I've been Christine Marley.
And thank you for taking a ride on the New York Mystery Machine.
Tammany Hall, but for gold.